This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 7th of September 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. Today we experience art with all of our senses at Tate Britain. Join Joseph Cornell on his imaginary journeys in Wanderlust at the Royal Academy, and then we don't quite get to the end as we conclude with Unfinished, the show at the Courtauld Gallery here in London. That's all to come here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Now, those familiar with Rossetti's work will know the name of the beautiful pre-Raphaelite muse Jane Morris. In a more contemporary setting, we know the modern-day Jane Morris as the editor of the Art newspaper, and today we're grateful for her expert guidance around three big exhibitions on in London at present. Welcome to the show, Jane.
Hello.
Now, we know what bacon tastes like, but do we know what Francis Bacon tastes like? Well, it seems that we probably can. Tell.
Well, we possibly do now. The Tate Britain has got, I think it's a very strange show. It's called the Tate Sensorium. And it's an experiment that's been done by the museum with a creative studio called Flying Object, and sound designers, scent designers, lighting, staging, people involved to create this sort of multi-sensory experience. What they've done is they've taken four famous works from the collection, one of which is, of course, a Francis Bacon. And the viewers go around in very small groups of four. It's a semi-darkened room. And you stand in front of the work, and in some cases you hear sound or you touch things. And in the case of the Francis Bacon, you taste something. Which
You don't lick the painting, though, do you?
No, I think the conservators would have several fits and die in the first one if that was the case. No. You contemplate the painting. You're allowed to walk around, and you take part in these sense experiences. And in the case of the Francis Bacon, which is Figure in a Landscape, one of the very, very famous painting in the collection. You listen to some sounds and you are given something to eat. They call it a chocolate. I won't spoil the surprise for those who may still go to see this, but it's not the most pleasant taste sensation you're ever likely to have.
Right. So the whole idea then is what, giving you a different approach to interpreting artwork?
It seems to be a bit of a vogue at the moment, because the National Gallery has just closed a show called Soundscapes, which some of Monocle's listeners might have seen. For those who didn't, musicians were asked to interpret works of art. So you stood in front of the work and you listened to music. This is a step further. You stand in front of the work, and the idea is that to see what kind of responses that engenders in you. It's unlike soundscapes in that you're wearing a bracelet, and the bracelet records your physiological reactions to what you're seeing and hearing and experiencing. Mm. And you, when you leave, they give you a printout which shows how your body reacted, which is quite interesting because it isn't necessarily how you felt you were reacting. And it compares your reactions to the average, and they're collecting this data. I'm not quite sure what for, but I believe University of Sussex are doing some kind of science project around this.
Mm-hmm. Because it came out of a tech background, actually, didn't it? It was the winner of a big tech prize.
Yes, I believe that's right. And I know that Wired were very keen on it. And yeah.
I think it's called the IK Prize. They give it for an idea that uses innovative technology to enable the public to discover, explore and enjoy British art.
Yeah. Indeed.
So, and then you were supposed to go off and take that sort of newfound knowledge around the rest of the collection.
Yes. Well, I'm not quite sure how this works, if I'm totally honest, because I have to say that I found this a really rather intensely unpleasant experience. And if you look at my physical reactions to it, that is actually born out of them, which mine do appear to be unusually high, and they commented on it when they printed off my reaction. Most of my reactions are quite close to the maximum. And I thought that was quite interesting, because it seemed to me, I mean, I didn't really enjoy the experience very much. I found it very interesting. Mm. I didn't find it a terribly pleasurable experience. And, you know, it says here, you've got a very strong reaction to the smell and sound. You've got very strong physical reaction to touch and sound with the full stop work. I found that it sort of made me realise perhaps why I like art so much, because since I seem to have these very powerful reactions to the noise, which I found quite, some of them quite unpleasant, and some of the smells I personally found pretty horrible. And the taste sensation is also pretty unpleasant. Mm. Now, I know other people don't necessarily react to it like that. Some people actually really like the sound and the smell, and, you know, not just from a point of view of interest, they actually found it pleasurable. I found the most unpleasant. So I didn't feel that this was an experience I did want to carry out into the gallery, and I have had a real sense of, phew, this is why I like art. It doesn't scream at me like these other these other sensations.
Did your readout, did that confirm what you knew you felt whilst you were experiencing it, or was it different?
It is different. I felt that my strongest reaction had been to the first work, which is an interior by Richard Hamilton, which is accompanied by sounds and smells. And I also thought my sort of probably my other strong reaction was to The Figure in a Landscape, the Francis Bacon. In fact, if you look at the printout, I had a sharp spike on the Francis Bacon, which I suspect is when I actually first tasted the chocolate. But otherwise, it calmed down, whereas on the other three, it was all very high. And that isn't really what I expected.
Absolutely fascinating. So it's called Taste Sensorium. It's at Tate Britain and it runs until the 20th of September. You're listening to The Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin, my guest in the studio today, the editor of the art newspaper. She's Jane Morris. And next, we're off to Wanderlust. This is the artist Joseph Cornell, curated by Sarah Lee, and it's at the Royal Academy of Arts. Is it worth going?
Oh, absolutely. I think what's quite interesting with the shows that I've chosen, we're in a very sort of changeover period now, actually, in that a lot of the big shows, the new big shows, are all going to open in the next couple of weeks. So these are really kind of last chance to see. And actually, the shows are unified by the fact that none of them are very large. I think this is a kind of jewel box of a show. It's upstairs in the Sackler Galleries. I think it's 80 works, but a lot of them are quite small. So it really isn't a huge exhibition. It's really beautifully put together. You could spend an hour in there. You could spend 3 or 4 hours in there, depending on how much you want to look at all the little things. Because, of course, Cornell is most famous for making beautiful shadow boxes, they're called. They're sort of shoebox-sized boxes, sometimes with a glass top on them, sometimes not. And they're full of little objects which you can't lift them out. This is one of the things that's a problem with them, actually. But they've made a real effort to open them up, take things out. You can see underneath that there are further objects placed in holes. Some of them make sounds. It's a really fascinating show. It's the first show of Cornell for, I think, about 30 years, actually. He's hugely famous in America, but he's well known here, but he's less frequently seen.
Mm. And I mean, he's celebrated from everyone from the surrealists to the abstract expressionists. Everybody seems to love him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very eccentric, in a way unique artist. When I walked around, I thought you can really see he was friends with Duchamp, and you can see that in his work. He was friends with Max Ernst. You can see this in his work. I don't think he was friends or possibly even knew about Henry Darger, but there's a kind of sense of that outsider artist, strange, magical world. You know, Darger created these whole stories around a set of little girls called the Vivian Sisters. And there's a little sense of that in Cornell. That there's this magical Alice in Wonderland sort of world going on. And yet, he was admired by Twombly. I believe Yoko Ono went to see him. He was friendly with Mark Rothko. I mean, there's very little relationship between Cornell and Rothko work-wise. He's often presented as a reclusive eccentric, and there is some truth in that, but he did also make friendships all across the art world, in dance, in music, literature, and in the painting world. So although he in one way kept himself to himself, he did have this network of relationships, and he loved writing letters to people. There's some correspondence between him and Dorothea Tanning in the show. He was always writing to people, and he didn't travel very much. In fact, he barely left the sort of New York suburbs through most of his life. And yet he was fascinated by travel. He was fascinated by European grand hotels. He was fascinated by 19th century ballet dancers. He was fascinated by science. And yet in this sort of wooden house that he lived in, he sort of distilled all that knowledge and creates these kind of magical boxes and cut up films.
And each one is its own little entire world, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. I mean, for people who don't know his work, one example that I really liked, there's a box called Beehive. It's quite small. I mean, it's probably 6 inches across. And it's got 5 little thimbles, which do look a bit like beehives. There's a little sort of glass mirror round it, and you peer into it and it looks like thimbles. It looks like a beehive. It looks like a forest with trees, because these little hives repeat themselves, and the bottom of it looks like a forest floor. It's a kind of magic piece. And I think a Mexican poet actually wrote a poem about it devoted to Cornell. And he actually saw it in a different way and called it, he referred to Thumbelina, lost in a garden of reflection. So you can read all sorts of things. And, you know, it's 5 thimbles and some glass. It's a bit Duchampian.
It's on until the 27th of September. It's called Wanderlust, and it's the Royal Academy of Arts. You're tuned to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. Jane Morris is our expert today, the editor of the Art newspaper, and we are heading towards the end, or are we? This is Unfinished. Tell me about this show.
Oh, well, now, again, another small show, a collection show. I think it's only 20 works in this case. The Courtauld is a gallery, another jewel box gallery. They've taken some works in their collection that are either unfinished or thought to be unfinished or might be unfinished. It's a fascinating concept, I think, because anyone who has ever tried to make a work of art, a painting or a sculpture, knows that this issue of when something is finished is a real problem. And it can be very frustrating for artists that things they knock out very quickly can look great, and things that they work and rework and rework can suddenly get to this horrible point where they go from not quite working to being a bit like sort of curdled mayonnaise and it's a mess. So I think artists will be interested in it from that point of view. The works were actually collected, though, to show artists' techniques. So for those who are interested in looking at how the artistic process works, this is a very good show. So it's interesting on a number of levels.
Yeah. Cezanne, Michelangelo, something very, very personal about seeing a kind of a chisel mark, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, for me, some of the most interesting things were actually, there is an etching by Rembrandt. And I wouldn't have recognised it particularly as by Rembrandt. I mean, I did need the label. Most of it is white space. And then there's a very detailed corner that's really, really, really worked up. And it's not at all clear why he worked that far and then stopped. And you can then see the rest of the construction of the drawing. But for whatever reason, he was clearly unhappy with it. Because as I say, he did pass the etching. Now, he was clearly etching straight into the plate rather than, So again, he must have just been dissatisfied with some bit of it or got bored with it. And he just put it aside. And there's quite a bit of that in the exhibition. You know, you see some people are doing the beginnings of sketches and they don't like them, perhaps. Or they did a sketch and they really, really like it, because there's a couple of works there, particularly by Degas, which I think look quite finished in a way. Certainly to the modern eye, they're quite finished. And that's another clever thing in this show, because the idea of less worked up pieces, unfinished works, it probably plays very well to a contemporary audience. So some of the works I think we would definitely consider finished now, whether or not the artist did.
Do you think that part of the reason we're fascinated with unfinished works, as one of the reviews points out, is that it allows us to complete the works in our own minds?
Well, I'd put it a bit differently. I think they occupy a slightly strange world. They allow you to see things where you can invent possibilities around them. So, you know, for example, there's a painting by Perino. It's very famous, actually. And it's of the Holy Family. And the two babies are painted. And then the two adult figures are just the sort of gold underpainting. And some drawing. Again, often studied in a very classic, this is how Renaissance painters built up their layers of works. But what it actually does is create this sort of odd, you know, sort of shimmering world where we have two semi-angelic gold figures. I mean, they're Mary and Joseph, I think. But the babies are rolling around looking like perfectly happy, fat babies. The overall effect is really disconcerting and peculiar and interesting.
And you can see that for yourself. That's unfinished and it's at the Courtauld Gallery until the 20th of September. And that really does genuinely bring us to the end. We will not be unfinished here. Jane Morris, thank you very much for joining us. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. My producer was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again tomorrow for our music review. But for now, thanks very much for listening.